Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacey on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross.
All right, hour number three here of Tom, Jake, and Stacey. This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Man, I just saw a tweet that just made my blood boil.
What was it?
You'll know at 2:30.
Okay.
Okay. Right now we're talking about Pete Carroll, whether or not he should be fired. The idea of that just seems utterly ridiculous. But I think that there are some fair points to be made. So let's hear some of them. Brian is in Seattle. He gets us started. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been away, so maybe I missed something. I usually listen to you guys in my car, and I haven't been to work for the last 3 days, so I'm trying to figure out where people are coming from to say that they want him fired, and what based on what?
Based on the fact that overall principle that Pete Carroll is never going to change, and that he is holding Russell Wilson back from being at his best, and that Pete Carroll is not going to make the moves necessary for him to succeed and also in turn for this team to get over the hump and get to the Super Bowl. Also, game management decisions as well, I think, is where people are coming from.
Okay, yeah, he has made some mistakes, I'm sure. I thought he should have gone for it on fourth down, but should he be fired for stuff like that? I don't think so. I don't think his game management has been that bad. It's frustrating sometimes, but are there coaches out there that you can replace them with that don't make mistakes?
I don't think that it's necessarily a question of that, but I'll tell you this. I have seen in other sports managers getting fired for one fatal decision. Now, not all the time, but Curtis, maybe you could speak up and back me up on this. Was Grady Little fired for leaving Pedro in too long in Game 7 of the 0-3 LCS?
Pretty much.
Now, the ownership, I think, had an issue with him to begin with because he wasn't really an analytics guy. That's the direction they wanted to go. But in Game 7 of an LCS, this manager, Grady Little, left Pedro Martinez in too long. He blew the game, and then Little was fired the next day. So single decisions in the context of a big game, it does happen on occasion. Let's go to Sherry in Tacoma. What's up, Sherry?
Oh, my head is hurting. Ugh. Talk about a bunch of whiny-ass babies. I have been a fan since 1977. I remember a 2-14 season. Pete Carroll has been here for 10 years. We have been able to go and play football in January 8 times out of the 10. We are just spoiled, and we should enjoy this ride because guess what? It's going to come to an end sooner than later, and the same people who are calling for Pete Carroll's head are going to be going, oh, I so wish we still had Pete Carroll. He makes it fun. It's exciting. Whoa, oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to just get off of Twitter, off of the radio.
No, Sherry, horrible. Sherry, calm down. It's fine. You can still
don't get off the radio.
No, don't get off the radio.
We still need to listen, Sherry.
Yeah,
we appreciate
Sherry,
you.
Please don't leave.
Yeah.
Sherry, thank you for your call. I really think that sentiment is a great one, and it's a great perspective because it's true. I mean, look, if you've been a fan of this team, it doesn't have to be since 1977 like Sherry has, but for myself, being a fan my entire life, there are moments of this franchise where there has not been anything like this success under Pete Carroll. And Mike Holmgren had a couple really strong years, and then it floundered. I mean, it is hard to have this type of sustained success. And I do think that it's okay to criticize, point to things in which this team can get better. But to move on from Pete Carroll, who, like Sherry pointed out, 8 of the 10 seasons, you make it into the playoffs, and you have winning seasons overall. I mean, it's very impressive and very hard to do in this league.
Sean is in Centralia. What's up, Sean?
The answer is no as far as firing him, although I would love to see him make a change at D.C., although I don't think he will. I think the one thing that's fair to point out, he has been able to coach under great ownership. Some of these other coaches we've had in the past, there's been some questionable ownership. So it's, you know, it's kind of hard to compare what they may or may not have been able to do. But this ownership has been phenomenal for him. I'd like to see him stay. But again, like I say, I'd like to see a change at D.C. I don't think we will.
I think you're right about that, Sean. And by the way, bringing up the point about ownership, that is a great point, A. And B, that works both ways. Having great ownership allows Pete to do what he does free of interference.
Mm-hmm.
And it also probably secures his job a little bit. Like if it were the Jets, they go through a coach a year.
It's a really interesting point. It's just one that, A, Pete Carroll succeeded in other venues. He succeeded at USC, obviously not under ownership, but in a different program.
Right. Administration.
I don't love the argument that Pete wouldn't be good or that his only success is because of, I don't think this is what the caller was saying, but is because of Russell Wilson or the environment or because of someone else. Mostly because you can't prove that. There's no way for you to know that. It's just a hypothetical argument that gets to be right to you because you don't know otherwise.
About only winning because you have Russell Wilson?
Right. I think one of the arguments I'm seeing is that it's because of someone else that Pete Carroll's been able to find success. And I don't think that's the case.
I mean, you could say that about any successful head coach.
Well, yeah. Who's Andy Reid without Patrick Mahomes? Clearly still a great coach, but is he getting to Super Bowls?
Yeah, who's Belichick without Brady?
Right, exactly. It's not fair to do that to a head coach who is a good head coach and a proven head coach.
He's just another cheater is what he is. Greg's in Polesville. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
The question, absolutely not. Why would we even consider firing Pete Carroll? I mean, if you think about the last, you know, since the beginning of the Seahawks history in the NFL of 1976, there's only been three coaches that have even propelled us to a Super Bowl or a Super Bowl win. Now, Chuck Knox did not do that. He didn't even get us to a Super Bowl, but he did a good job. Then you look at Mike Holmgren, he got us to a Super Bowl, our first Super Bowl we lost. We did a good job. He's a great coach. But then you look at Pete Carroll and what he's done in his tenure with John Snyder and Paul Allen and Russell Wilson. Those four guys are the cornerstone of this team and the history. And, you know, I mean, you can't break those guys up. It would be foolish, just foolish. And I think that there are some – I think Sherry put a good – you know, nail on the hammer is that we're spoiled. We are. And you look at how many years that we have done a great job. You cannot break up that history.
I'm right with you on that. I think it would be foolish to do that as well. How long? See, he's talking too, though, about the fact that they've won so much. Do you think a coach should be kept around because of what he's already done or what he's going to do? This is one issue you run into with coaches who have won a lot, is that eventually you have to give them some leeway once they start losing, right?
Correct.
You do. I mean, but the question is, how long do you give them before you kick them out the door? Like all those legendary coaches, Chuck Knoll, Tom Landry, Ditka, all those guys who won a lot, once they started losing, and you probably wanted to kick them out the door 2 years in, you had to give them more leeway because of all the winning they did.
That's why I point to this offseason as starting to go to that transition phase. You had, really, in my mind, you've had these 2 years to say, hey, we are rebuilding, we are retooling. We took a lot of our former Pro Bowl players that we had on defense, that we had on offense. We are moving on and in a different direction. We're making Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, the two keystones of our team, and we're building around those guys. And at this point now, you have draft capital, you have cap space to make the proper decisions to put your team in the best position possible to make this a Super Bowl contending roster. I think from this point on, that's where those critiques or criticisms can be heightened a little bit as you're making the decisions, because I believe that they have done an amazing job in this 2 year transition, not just transitioning and overhauling the roster, but also continuing to win despite that.
Hey, Kyle, or whoever's back there, I think we should from now on only put callers through who think Pete Carroll should be fired.
I don't.
I want to hear from them. We've got a bunch of people that we've heard from so far that all think that's a stupid idea to fire him, and I agree. But I think from now on, once a line opens up, we should only take callers who believe he should be fired. That's what that's who I want to hear from.
All right, I will do my best. I can only take the callers that call.
Well, you can always just tell them.
We'll tell them to kick rocks.
That's right.
Your opinion's too good. We don't want it. We're looking for bad opinions.
Go pound sand. Manny's in California. What's up, Manny?
Yeah, hi, guys. Thank you for taking the call. I have just a quick question. How many coaches in the NFL in the last 10 years have been as good and as consistent as Pete Carroll, other than Belichick? It's a silly conversation, really, because ultimately it's about success. We're not looking about it, and we're not talking about a losing season. We're not talking about a team that's struggling. This is a team that went to the playoffs in the divisional round. You know, it's just crazy to me that people have this conversation. The other thing is, when people talk about, Pete Carroll in Seattle, you want to look at 10 seasons. We say 8 of them are in the playoffs. In fact, should be 9. It was a field goal away against Arizona that would have made 9 out of 10. And the first season, it's the season where he was retooling. He was changing the whole, the whole system, the players. So, I mean, for me, it's a clear thing. We just got to keep going at this and go Hawks.
Manny,
he's trained by Russell Wilson. I like it.
Manny, thank you for the conversation. Appreciate your fire and passion. And look, I do agree with this sentiment overall, that this conversation, I think, is null and void in the sense that Pete Carroll absolutely should be the coach here, has done a lot of incredible things. I think the question here is do you have the confidence that at this point where this roster currently sits, do you feel that that you have the confidence in Pete Carroll to get them over the hump and to get them to that point where they're not just getting into the playoffs and the wild card and divisional round, but that they have the ability to go to the Super Bowl and that they are continuing to get better while you have Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner in their prime or under contract in this 3-4 year window? I think that is the big question. And are you comfortable with settling for success? It's not.
No,
my opinion that I sit here and say, I don't like winning 10 games. I love winning 10 games. But do you feel like you're at that point where this organization and Pete Carroll is willing to make the decisions and changes necessary to help get them to the Super Bowl and make them more of an elite team rather than, hey, this is Pete Carroll's best coaching job because he outperformed his roster?
This goes back to a conversation we've had probably more than a few times. What would you rather have? Would you rather have sustained success with no Super Bowl, or would you rather have a Super Bowl and no sustained success? Maybe just, a couple of good seasons here and there. Because in Seattle right now, we have sustained success and one Super Bowl that is going further and further in the past every single year.
But you have two trips to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but
and
one of them is the worst memory you have.
I agree, but I'm just saying teams don't just go to the Super Bowl every single year. To think that there's a failure of an organization because you didn't get back there is silly. I understand where people are coming from when they say, I'd love a change in in-game decisions. I'd love to see what the offense looks like with more control. It's not just having Russell Wilson pass more. It's drafting offensive linemen that succeed with pass protection and not just making room in the run. I think, though, that this team has also had changes like decline in just defensive personnel, right? You don't have the kind of players and the caliber of players you used to. You have good players out there. Bobby Wagner, great player. Quandre Diggs, I think a great player. Jadeveon Clowney, great player. But you didn't all come together and perform at the level that they were expecting them to on defense. And is that Pete Carroll? Did Pete Carroll, let a 32-yard pass to Devontae Adams happen?
No, but he's the one the coach ultimately is the one who pays for that stuff, whether it's his fault or not.
It's true.
I mean, I don't know that he needs to pay right this second for that, but ultimately he might. Trayvon's in Port Orchard.
The culture was lost after the Seahawks Super Bowl against the Patriots. The culture just completely went out the window after that. Now, you want to look...
Oh,
Trayvon.
You know what I'll say to that, though?
I
agree that it was a fractured locker room, because if you look at the stats for that 2015 team, they're a lot better than they ended up being performance-wise in the playoffs. But I do think it was a fractured organization after just such a heartbreaking loss in the Super Bowl.
So this is
a mostly different team.
Today.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's hard to say that when you've got a team that's
correct
has a handful of players that were there.
We lost Trayvon. Finish his point, it was going to be that the Packers had to make a really bold decision getting rid of Mike McCarthy, who had been a very successful head coach for them.
That's very
They
true.
Took a risk in getting rid of him, and then they got Matt LaFleur, who took him to the next level.
You know what? What do you guys think? Because that came from Aaron Rodgers. Right, he was mm-hmm.
he was
sick
unhappy
of what was going
with the
on
offense.
There. So if Russell Wilson ever got to the point where he was tired of what was going on around him, Jake,
why are you looking at me like that?
Take it away, Jake.
Look, this is why I keep coming back to at this point in time for this organization, for this head coach, in 2020, 2019, you paid Russell Wilson, you paid Bobby Wagner, and you signified that this is Russell Wilson's team. This is Bobby Wagner leading the defense. That these are the two guys, right? Now you're at a point in 2020 where you're at a crossroads where you need to decide, are you going to build around Russell Wilson and give him the proper weapons, the proper protection that he hasn't had in his entire career here? Or are you going to continue to keep building around the defense and getting offensive linemen that are perfect for the run game and poor in pass protection? I think those are things that you have to evaluate. And this is Pete Carroll's opportunity to show growth, to show that he is evolving in his philosophy and recognizes the roster that he currently has. So I think that 2020, this offseason, is going to signify quite a bit to everybody from that standpoint.
Don is in Jacksonville, Florida. What's going on, Don?
Not much. How you fellas? How's everybody doing today?
Well, you know, go ahead.
Yeah. I really don't think he should be fired. I mean, I think the defense is, the more they play together, the better they'll get. But I think they need to make some adjustments on offense, and I think the main thing is they need to get a little bit more aggressive in the first and second quarter instead of getting so far behind by halftime.
So, again,
you're
signifying a philosophy change. Pete Carroll has always been a guy that said, look, we can win the game in the fourth quarter. We can, it's not ideal. It's not what I want to do. But if we're stumbling over our feet here in the first half, that's okay, because we feel good about the second half adjustments that we're going to make. We're going to keep the game close enough where we've got Russell Wilson, who can essentially help us come from behind and bail us out to win in the fourth quarter. That's always been kind of the philosophy. So do you think that he can change, adapt, get aggressive, retool, relook philosophy as he has his roster? I think those are questions that you can ask.
Has that always been his philosophy, though, even back in the day?
Yeah.
But they didn't always win close games in 2014 and 13.
No, they didn't always win close games, roster, too.
Exactly. He only does it because of the personnel he has.
But he's always favored. If there's going to be any style of game, he is very comfortable playing that style of game.
Well, he may be comfortable,
he wants to be
but
close.
I'm definitely not. Trayvon is back on the line. What's up, Trayvon?
Sorry about that, guys.
Trayvon. You there, buddy?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
I just wanted to make the point that we'll never know if Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll have a feud. I mean, just in their personalities, you'll never see it. It'll never come out.
Mm-hmm.
Dang it.
Golly.
He keeps teasing us.
Risk. That's
I know.
That's bad producing.
That's okay. No, Kyle. No. Kyle, you're a shining star.
You are. Three strikes and
Trayvon's
out.
His once again, what Trayvon was going to say was that Aaron Rodgers is constantly complaining. He's always got a thorn in someone's side. He's always got a bad attitude. He's more likely to speak up. That's not in Russell Wilson's nature to go to an owner or a head coach and make a complaint about Pete Carroll, Daryl Bevel, Brian Schottenheimer, whoever it is. That's not Russell's style. That is Aaron Rodgers, distinctly his style. He's a whiner.
Interesting. So is it on?
You think that's in? You don't think that's?
Is it on Russell Wilson, the quarterback, to make the change to internally?
No, it's on the head coach.
Yeah, I mean.
So that brings us back to the conversation. Now I'm like, oh well, maybe Pete Carroll's got to go.
No.
You got a quarterback you think is top three in the league. He's in the prime of his career. You just made him the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. You haven't competed for a conference championship in 5 years. That's a failure.
It is.
It's a failure, but is it a fireable offense? There's a lot of elite quarterbacks from the last 20, 30, 40 years who rarely made conference championship games. We went through a couple of them before. I mean, Elway, Fouts, Marino. I think he only went to two. I mean, is that a requirement?
What is the fair threshold? Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't think that getting deep into the playoffs is necessarily the best way to judge a coach. Maybe wins and losses can be tricky.
And here's the other thing is I think Pete Carroll was up against it in 2018. You got to remember in 2017, the way that year finished, them not making the playoffs. So they went 2015, fractured locker room. They lose in the divisional round. 2016, Russell Wilson gets injured. They have an abysmal running game. In 2016, they go to the divisional round again. Yeah, they did. So then in 2016,
they lost to Atlanta. Mm-hmm.
They lost to Atlanta. That's right. In 2017, they don't make the playoffs. And that was the moment where Tom Cable, Daryl Bevel, the offense was absolutely fractured. The offensive line was as bad as it could get. You had Russell Wilson being basically 90% of your offense and showing that he could be this MVP caliber player. What Pete Carroll did at that point was he showed that he can move on from guys that he was extremely loyal to in Tom Cable, Daryl Bevel, and they brought in Brian Schottenheimer in 2018. They got rid of Chris Richard. They bring in Ken Norton Jr. And I think that they have given themselves some more time by saying, hey, we are retooling. We're in a rebuilding phase in 18 and 19. And now this is the year. This is the time where they start, you know, projecting themselves forward to being Super Bowl contenders. I think that's what they have, you know, kind of sold this transition to be.
All right. Hold on the line. I see a few of you there who are at least frustrated with Pete, even if you don't want to kick him out the door. Right now, what's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
Hey, by the way, Kyle, yesterday, how come you didn't put for What's on Tap that Indiana was going to get destroyed by Rutgers?
Oh, was that two ranked teams? I usually try to give you a ranked basketball
match. Yeah, I know.
Matchup.
No, they were unranked teams,
obviously. Ah, that explains it.
Archie Miller's got to go. He's got to go. Number 8, Oregon taking on the Cougs at 6 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Oregon State at UW, 8 o'clock on FS1. We'll take one more call here before we run. Kenneth in Seattle. Go ahead, Kenneth.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, Kenneth, what do you got?
Yeah, man, I think Pete is doing a great job, but he needs to get out of the rut of him old-fashioned running the ball when he got a top-tier quarterback. He needs to evolve with the rest of the NFL. I think he refused to give up his old-fashioned mentality of run the ball when he got a top-five quarterback. That he can actually win a Super Bowl and go there if he just trusts in Russell Wilson arm and get him the offensive line he needs and get a good defense. He needs to stop with that run the ball all the time because, you know, all teams is on to us with that.
Well, here's the thing about that. We have short memories. The last three games, the world-class running back that got us to this point, Chris Carson wasn't here. Right. I mean, would we be complaining about the amount of times they ran it if Chris Carson were healthy? The reason why we're complaining is because they ran a guy who hasn't played in a year, Marshawn Lynch.
And that is true. And the other part that I'm really looking at is the defense. The defense has gotten worse in these 2 years that we talked about in 18 and then you go to 19. This defense has progressively gotten worse, and that is a troubling trend. That is something that they have to fix, whether that's personnel, whether that's schematics. That's something that absolutely has to be addressed moving forward.
All right, coming up next, we still got a few of you on the line, so we may go back to that. Hold on the line if you're there. Plus a tweet that made my blood boil. And more evidence against the Astros. It's just coming out hour by hour here. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
I can read the signs if I had a little buzzer. Somebody were buzzing me, you know, from the In the back room there. Okay. This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We'll take a few more of your calls here real quick, and then we'll get back to the sign stealing. Ellen's in Puyallup. Go ahead, Ellen.
Hello?
Yep, Ellen, go ahead.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you for a minute there. I've been frustrated with Pete Carroll all season long. He seems to me like he's the definition of insanity. You keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
That is a...
not going to work.
But you know what? I'll argue on his behalf. He does get the same result, but usually the result is winning. For a while there, they were winning. They were 11-2.
Is the thing that you think he's doing over and over again running the ball? What is it specifically that you're frustrated with him not doing?
Not starting fast enough, not putting the ball in Wilson's hands and letting him go. It's like he's got him on a leash.
I don't disagree with that.
I don't know if it has him on a leash. I don't think that is the right phrasing here because I don't think Pete is actively trying to hold Russell Wilson back from being great. I think that he, in his mind, in his the way that he's thinking in terms of the game flow of how it goes, is that he's able to help Russell Wilson be more effective by running the football. If you want to be mad at that part, I can understand, but to act like he's trying to hold Russell Wilson back, I think, is an entirely different issue.
Jake, I don't think that anybody thinks that Pete is purposely doing it for the reason of holding him back, but that could still be the result.
They think he's doing it for the reason of, for instance, ball security.
Right.
He's not controlling the time of possession.
He's not doing it for the purpose of holding Russell's stats back or his performance back. He's doing it because he thinks this is the best way to win. And he's won a lot. So who are we to question that? But at the same time, they have had slow starts. They've had starts in first quarters and halves where they've looked like a high school football team out there.
Yeah, I'm not sure what goes into that. That's something that both Dwayne Brown and Russell Wilson said they wanted to change moving forward. I don't think the team doesn't want to change that.
Joe's in Kent. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was just thinking that Coach Carroll, he looks like he still coaches Wilson like he's the 2012-2013 Wilson. Instead of realizing he's the generation player that he is, even though he does say he knows that, then, you know, why can't he just let him go like we've been talking about? But then if that's not his philosophy inside, I don't want to lose Carroll's culture. Can he come, you know, become more of a CEO coach that puts these other people's in? It just takes a little step back and just really lets the game people, you know, the new analytics people start really just seeing Wilson do what he can do, and let's just build around him again.
I think there's room for the analytics people. It's not that, but I mean, Pete is so wired. I can't imagine him taking that big a step.
There's no way he steps back.
Yeah,
he's such a hands-on coach. When you go there at training camp, OTAs, whatever it is during the offseason, he is out there with players in between, you know, whether they're lining up to stretch and he's walking down aisles or he's running, standing in back of the defense, making sure they're all lined up right. He is incredibly integrated into those practices. There's no way that I think he pulls himself back. Have we talked about maybe getting someone to help with watching for timeouts or delay of game or for clock management? Some guys have some help during games, but why would you? If you're a head coach who has fostered what you think is a very successful program, why would you take a step back?
Racona in North Carolina, thanks for joining us.
Thank God. I've been trying to get through for a long time. I love Pete. Let me just preface that by saying he's very empathetic. I love when you guys put on that phone call with the wide receiver that was drafted. He'll cry with him, but it's time. I mean, his archaic offensive philosophy, just even picking Schottenheimer, who's notorious for just running the ball. They had no imagination since the Super Bowl. They're capable of doing it. No jet sweeps, no imaginative plays on the offense. And Keith just burning Russell Wilson with no line and playing like his defense is all-world 2012, 2013, 2014. I've been watching 5 years of Tom Cable trying to turn athletes on ballerinas to linemen. I mean, it's like watching Dean Smith in four quarter offense. Just run the clock out to the end and Russell, let's please bail us out. It's just too much. He has to bend a little bit. you know, Jake has been saying it a whole bunch. You know, play to your stars, not try to fix a square peg in a round hole all the time. And he shouldn't get a pass just because he was at two Super Bowls for the rest of his life either. My God.
That is a look, that last thing he said there, I completely agree with that. You don't get a pass for life because you went to two Super Bowls and won one of them. He's done a lot here. He's earned a little bit of leeway. But at some point, what matters to this organization? Winning a Super Bowl or just consistent success?
And that's where I point to 2020 being this launching off pad for him to, look, they've set the culture. They have rebuilt the culture and have gotten it to the point where they want it to be. Offensively, they grew this year. In 2019, they grew. They grew into a top 10 offense in the league. They can continue to keep getting better as they continue to keep leaning on their quarterback. But now they're in a position right now where they can set the stage. They can get better in pieces on defense, and that they can surround their offensive stars with the right pieces moving forward to make them elite, to make them take that even further step. And defensively, you've got a lot of holes. You've got a lot of areas that you have to really address. Defensive line, secondary. Those are key pieces that with $60 million in cap and with 11 draft picks, you should be able to figure it out if you're Pete Carroll and John Schneider. And that's where they're going to have to really show that they're willing to, that they are able to take this program to the next level.
You guys worry, though, with $60 million and 11 draft picks that they're not going to hit on enough of them?
I mean, there are going to be players they don't hit on. I think that they have a lot more flexibility with this draft than they've had in previous seasons. Mm-hmm. Last year, they had to make a ton of trades to go from 4 picks to 11. So, yeah, you're going to get guys that aren't starting this year. You're going to get guys that are special teamers their first year out. What I will say about the offensive philosophy, I understand wanting to get more creative on offense, but it's not necessarily a losing recipe. The team that is playing in the NFC conference this weekend, the team with the best record in the NFC, is a team that ranks second overall in running the football this year. The difference isn't the offense. The difference is they have also the league's best defense outside of New England for the regular season. And I think they are, as far as play calling and stuff like that, yeah, they've been more creative. There are differences there. But I think that part of the reason that you've struggled, you have to admit, has been your defense. And I don't think if you give Russell Wilson the ball and have him throw 40 times a game, I don't know that you're still getting to a Super Bowl this year.
If the defense goes unchanged?
I'm just saying, it is hard to win a championship with a defense. And you have stars on defense. I don't want to make it sound like I'm dogging the defense, but you didn't all come together consistently, and you didn't reach your ceiling consistently on defense.
We sum it up next. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
We got tweets. We got tweets coming in left and right. Sign stealing, etc. It just gets uglier by the minute. You know what? I want to read the tweet that made my blood boil before.
Okay.
This comes from an agent. Actually, the tweet is from Joel Sherman, but he's giving a Scott Boras quote. He says, quote, fans need to keep in mind that there are a lot of players who are in the spider web, but they're not the Black Widow just because they're a member of the team or the league. Let me read it again.
Okay.
Fans need to keep in mind that there are a lot of players who are in the spider web, but they're not the Black Widow just because they're the member of the team or the league. Hey, Scott, let me tell you something, buddy. We don't need to do anything. If any of the players who are caught in the spider web want to exonerate themselves by speaking out, I'm all ears, buddy. We don't need to behave a certain way because Scott Boras wants us to. We can say whatever we want about any of the players involved in this thing. We don't need to be, it's not on us to be fair about it. If they want to speak up, if George Springer wants to speak up and say, you know what, I wasn't involved in this, fine. Fine. But until then, I'm going to assume that you are involved in it.
Well, how could you not go along with that premise? I mean, that's the thing. Is until this gag order is released and that you have players that are willing to say something about it, you have to assume guilt by association. If you're a member, a major member of that clubhouse, then the assumption right now is that every single one of those guys was involved in it. If Jose Altuve, if Bregman, if Springer, if those guys are involved with that scheme, then you're telling me that the rest of the guys in that organization weren't going to follow suit of those guys?
Right. It's like the Astros and maybe the Red Sox. They commit this, we'll just call it a crime, for lack of a better term. And then the fans are supposed to capitulate to what Boris says? No, I don't think so. No. I'll make my own judgments. All right. Here's a tweet. You guys remember Scott Brosius? He was the old third baseman for the Yankees and also the third base coach for the Mariners. His son, is this from Instagram or is it from Twitter?
It's from Instagram.
It's from Instagram. Okay, Insta.
The IG.
Insta.
The IG. David Brosius tweets this out. My dad was the third base coach for the Mariners in 2017. The Mariners knew they were cheating. Every team did. The MLB did. He knew exactly how they were doing it in 2017. The MLB just wasn't going to do anything about it until the public found out. My dad would give fake signs at third, acting like he knew what the Astros pitcher was going to throw, and Cora and Hinch would scream at him, calling it Bush League. Weird how that works. And then, well, do you want to make a comment on that first before I go on?
Keep going.
No, just keep going.
This is a side point. He goes on, he says, if you want to read something better, Mike Trout takes HGH for a, quote, thyroid condition. It's a loophole he found, and the MLB doesn't make it public because they don't want fans knowing their best players on HGH, but people within know. Thought you'd appreciate that since you're a Dodgers fan. Boom.
Wow. If that is what it's going to take for people that are around this but not in it or of it to come out and say these things that are widely known, for people to look into it.
It's a pretty wild accusation.
Mike Trout is a wild accusation. However, it's not the first time that I've heard this.
No.
It is not the first time I've heard this. And typically when you have smoke in a lot of these situations, there is fire. So, look, Mike Trout looking into that situation is one thing. But for all these little pieces of evidence to now be formulating against the Houston Astros and how this was all done, to me, I mean, it is very, very clear what was going on.
What did you make of that Boris tweet?
I was going to say, what are the big questions? Oh, the Boris tweet?
Yeah. Did you think that he was out of line saying that? Because I did.
He's out of line saying it's not fair to criticize players when you don't know how. Well, if you're on the team, you know they're cheating. Like, what Astros player, especially a high-up player, Jose Altuve, doesn't know what's happening?
Right.
They all do.
I actually felt bad for AJ Hinch, but you knew what was happening. Even if you didn't condone it, it happened. And I have a really hard time believing that every player didn't know that.
And here's the thing, though. With AJ Hinch, we're hearing this report that he didn't condone it, but what extent did he do to stop it?
Hey, you guys shouldn't be doing that.
He broke a monitor once or twice. Okay, but how about the other 160 times the game was played?
Wait, he broke monitors and they still did it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
So,
which tells me it was like from condoned by higher up.
And it could, it very well could have been. But for AJ Hinch, like to me, you're suspended for a year. You got fired from your job. If you want to clear and exonerate your name, okay, all right. Well, let's have somebody stand up and say something about it. And to me, that's the part where Major League Baseball, in this case, we talked about it yesterday. It seems like they more want to isolate this incident and have a couple scapegoats here and there and then move on from this.
Yeah.
And instead of us really getting down to the point.
Well, there are other ways
I think that's what they got to do to move on fully.
There are other ways you benefited. Your RBI numbers are probably higher if some of your teammates are cheating and getting on base because they're connecting, because they know what pitchers are throwing. You know what I mean? Like, you are still part of a team. And what will always kill me about this is they might have been good enough to make it without cheating.
That's
at all.
The shame of it. You're 100% right. And we'll never know.
Yep. It's a shame.
Unbelievable. But they had to. I mean, look, like you said before, the competitive streak that's in these guys, it's pathological is what it is. They're pathologically competitive. So if they feel like they're getting an edge, even if they're not, they're going to take it.
Leave no chances, right? No stone unturned.
We're back tomorrow. We're looking ahead to the NFC Championship games and much, much more. It's been Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN Seattle.